Welcome to Quick Brain, bite-sized brain hacks for busy people who want to learn faster and achieve more. I'm your coach, Jim Quick.
Free your mind.
Let's imagine if we could access 100% of our brain's capacity.
I wasn't high, wasn't wired, just clear. I knew what I needed to do and how to do it.
I know Kung Fu.
Show me.
Welcome back, Quick Brains. I am your host and your brain coach, Jim Quick. Today we have psychologist and interpersonal relationship expert, Tai Toshiro, knows what it's like to be awkward. Growing up, he could do math in his head and memorize the earned run averages of every National League starting pitcher, but he couldn't pour liquids without spilling and habitually forgot to bring his glove to Little League games. In his research, he unpacks decades of research into human intelligence, neuroscience, personality, and sociology to help us better understand this widely shared trait and how these unique quirks can be our greatest superpower. Welcome to the show, Tai.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, been looking forward to this conversation because I'm sure you hear this a lot, but the title of your most recent book, Awkward, is pretty much defines like my life.
Oh, yeah. A lot. Well, you're in good company today because mine too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, why don't we start with that? Well, what inspired you to research and to write about this phenomenon of awkwardness?
So I had this time maybe 6 years ago or so where I just so happened to go visit a bunch of friends who had moved to new cities.
Okay.
And just by coincidence, a lot of these friends were socially awkward. And so I was watching them trying to make new friends in these new cities. And we'd go to parties or gatherings and I'd watch them be awkward. And you know how it is, as you're watching a social situation unfold, and I just see the other person make some excuse to go get a drink or go to the restroom or anything to end the conversation. And it made me really sad, actually. And I felt a lot of empathy for my friends, my awkward friends, who I knew were amazing people. Like tremendous friends with great character, so interesting. And I thought it's a real shame that in 2 or 3 minutes, this person made a decision about whether or not they wanted to get to know this person. And, you know, I had this thought, like, if awkward people could just skip the first 5 minutes of conversation, I think they'd actually be all right. And so that little curiosity, it kind of got me into looking into the research on social awkwardness. And I just found it to be fascinating. And here we are years later. And it's a really interesting area. And I think it's a really wonderful area because it shows the power of being unique and how that can have a tremendous upside.
So when you're thinking about those friends and reflecting on it, what are the characteristics or how would you define social awkwardness? And then my follow-up question would be, are there myths around awkwardness that maybe people, maybe we could clarify some of the things that people believe that maybe it's not true?
For sure.
So how would you define social awkwardness?
Well, I like to do two things. So there's awkward moments and then there's awkward people.
Okay.
Right. And we've all had awkward moments.
That's for sure.
Yeah. It's part of the fun of the topic, I think. Even the most socially adept people have had their awkward moments. They'll even blush sometimes years later when they recall these stories. They get funny, fortunately, over time, a lot of times, but in the moment, certainly very embarrassing. Awkward moments are just deviations from relatively minor social expectations.
What would be an example of?
So not having spinach in your front teeth. Pretty minor, right?
Yeah.
But if you were giving a talk and you had spinach stuck in your front teeth,
that would be pretty an awkward moment.
Pretty awkward, sure. Super embarrassed. People would feel awkward for you. A zipper. Pretty minor, actually, when you think about it, but super awkward when we don't meet that expectation. And so everyone has awkward moments or just these little blips or aberrations in what's otherwise usually pretty smooth social interaction. I think awkward moments actually tell us something pretty interesting about the social mind because it's like an all or nothing fire alarm. I don't know if you ever had that where there's barely any smoke or heat coming off the stove and the alarm goes off and it's really loud. It's kind of the way our minds react to awkward moments. And it just shows how sensitive we are to coordinating social interactions with each other, keeping those expectations rolling smoothly. And then anytime there's a deviation, we respond with a really powerful emotional response. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so those are awkward moments. Now, there's awkward people. Awkward people have more awkward moments, obviously.
Right.
But we also know that their brains actually just work differently than people who are what I would call socially fluent or really socially adept.
Okay.
And so about 10 to 15% of the population is socially awkward. And they just have a harder time deciphering what's the social skill required in the situation. So what's the expectation, social expectation here? They have a harder time executing the social skill to meet that expectation. Mm-hmm. They also have trouble with communication. So that could be understanding what someone else intends to communicate to them, or it could be getting their point across in a way that's socially palatable. So for example, sometimes awkward people are too blunt and you say, hey, you didn't need to say that, or you could have said it in a little more cushioned kind of way. The last characteristic is actually my favorite, and it's obsessive interests. And so awkward people, I like to say they really love what they love.
Okay.
And yeah, well, everybody has something that they're interested in. Awkward people almost get obsessive or do get obsessive about the things that they're interested in.
Going back to the myths, you think there's one or two myths that people commonly believe that maybe is not, your research has shown is not accurate or true, if there is any?
Oh, for sure.
Okay.
Right? Because people don't meet a certain social expectation, immediately our mind starts to search for more information. So why did they not shake my hand? Why are they not making good eye contact with me? And now we start to make attributions and fishing around. We might say, well, they're not making good eye contact with me because they're rude or they don't care what I have to say. Right. And now it goes to making an inference about the awkward person's intent. And the large majority of awkward people I know have tremendous intent. I mean, their intent is so good and they want so badly to do the right thing. They want so badly to be helpful and for the social interaction to go well. It's just they are a little bit clumsy socially, right? So it's an ability thing. And I think when people reframe it that way, that, hey, this isn't an intent, a bad intent on the awkward person's part. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's just that they're struggling processing what needs to happen in this situation or having a hard time executing on what they think needs to happen. Also, eye contact is another good thing. So when socially fluent people get into a social interaction, they reflexively look at the eye region of the other person.
Okay.
It's a really smart place to look because the eye region is the most information-rich part of the face.
Interesting.
Yeah. But, you know, no one had to tell the socially fluent person to do that. They just reflexively do that. Mm. And they do that time and time again. Now, socially awkward people, by comparison, tend to reflexively look at the chin or they tend to look at the corner of the ear, which are much less information-rich areas of the face. So you can imagine, right from the start of the interaction, the socially fluent person is keyed in to a lot of important social information, a lot of social cues coming from the emotions on the other person's face.
Right.
Socially awkward person has missed a lot of emotional information and at the same time has now sent kind of an awkward nonverbal signal to the other person. And if you've had someone make erratic eye contact with you, it does feel kind of viscerally uncomfortable.
Right.
Yeah.
Even unconsciously, if you're not even consciously aware, you just kind of will have this feeling of unease, maybe.
Exactly. And then you start to do that wondering.
Right. Is it because of?
Exactly. And I think this is a really good example of how there can be some misunderstandings about awkward people.
Okay.
So the reason why awkward people look at the chin or the corner of the ear is because looking into the eye region is too overstimulating for their brains. It's kind of like looking into the sun for too long, by analogy. And so by looking at the chin or the ear, which they learn to do very early on in life, they actually dampen the emotional intensity of the situation. And by doing so, they're actually more able to stay attuned to what you're saying and to stay linked into the interaction. So it's a totally different reasoning there, right? They're actually doing that so that they can understand what it is you're saying rather than being disrespectful or disinterested.
And I love that. Because the awareness is, even if you don't identify as awkward, someone listening, certainly we all know people who are awkward. It also takes the judgment out once you have these distinctions for people listening. Maybe they have somebody in their life that's looking at your ear, or their eyes are kind of erratic, or looking at their chin.
Yeah.
Is there a correlation? Have you found any at all between someone being an extrovert or introvert? Does that play into this at all?
So this is actually curious. So I expected to find a strong correlation between awkwardness and introversion, mm-hmm. right? It turns out it's not as strong as you would expect. There is a bit of a relationship between those two, but there's actually two kinds of awkward people, right? So you have the introverted, awkward person who's maybe looking at your shoes or the mm-hmm. corner of your ear. But you probably also know some awkward people who talk too much sometimes, and they tend to lecture people. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes about something that they're obsessively interested about that might not be as interesting to the other person.
Now in the book, you talk about how being awkward could actually be their benefits. It could be awesome, and there may be certain advantages. What would some of those be? So people listening, if they feel like they are awkward in social situations, that they're probably some benefit for them, a reward that comes from, like, in terms of the way they think or perceive the world.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of ways. Let me share two.
Okay.
So one way is actually social, believe it or not. So the way awkward people process social information is actually very different. So when a socially fluent person goes into a social situation, they're using top-down processing. So they're saying, oh, hey, this always gets me. When I walk into a room with a socially fluent friend, and let's say it's a party, there's a lot of people, a lot of commotion going on, and within seconds they say, there's a great vibe in here. Like, how'd you know that was the case? But they're just able to kind of top down and see, like, hey, the vibe, this general thing is good here. The awkward person, by comparison, so they're looking at what's on the table for snacks. They're looking at each person individually, they're thinking about the music. And it's actually a really great point of empathy is if you watch their brain work in fMRIs, they're furiously trying to make sense of what's going on. So they're trying to assemble all of this information, all this disparate information to figure out what is the vibe in this room? What is the expectation? What should I do? And so while that can be an impediment sometimes, other times it can be a real advantage. So some of the people I've heard from the most since this book came out are actually wives who are socially fluent, but their husbands are socially awkward. And they oftentimes tell me the same thing, which is that when there's a social problem that they have that they're really stuck on and that they can't figure out with their other socially fluent friends, they'll go ask their husband. And they said oftentimes their husband has a totally different perspective on what the situation is and how to solve it. And so they've seen details or pieces, right, of this social situation. They're able to hone in on that in a way that's really illuminating. So I think that's a really wonderful ability. And awkward people can just see things in unique ways. But also I think, you know, once they settle into themselves, I think they're so great at understanding the uniqueness in others, too.
Yeah.
And just these little parts of us that are kind of quirky or different, but the awkward personal zoom in on that detail and really appreciate it a lot of times.
So that's a great advantage and the way you frame it in a social setting. Mm-hmm. Is there another one that you...
Yeah, so there's this strong correlation between social awkwardness and giftedness, or striking achievement would be another way to think about it.
Yeah.
And we all kind of know people like this. Sometimes we say they're too smart for their own good is one of the colloquial phrases you'll hear. But folks who are really good at what they do, maybe even extraordinary at what they do, but they're kind of socially awkward as well. And one of my favorite studies on this was a large study of 8-year-olds, actually. And these 8-year-olds were kind of a unique sample in that they had all exhibited striking talent at that point in their life.
Okay.
And been identified by teachers or, you know, parents or someone else. It's like, wow, this kid is unbelievable at the violin. Or is unbelievable, you know, ballet or writing, whatever it might be. And they found that there was this strong correlation with awkwardness. And then they wanted to investigate, so what's the mechanism? You know, why does the awkward kid kind of tend towards this extraordinary talent? And what I love about this is that, yeah, there was some explanation from IQ so that they did have some intellectual strengths. But the better explanation by far was that they were more persistent. It's kind of that deliberate practice.
Persistent.
Yeah. So you hear about those 10,000 hours of mm-hmm. practice to get really good at something. Awkward kids will usually hit that much sooner.
Why do you think that is?
It's the obsessive interest.
The obsessive.
Yeah. Yeah. So they find something they love. They really zero in on it with tremendous focus. And then they're just tireless. And any parent of an awkward kid will tell you this. Whatever it is their kid loves, they will just night and day. Oftentimes, there needs to be disciplinary measures taken to say, you need to stop doing your math or writing your poetry, whatever it might be. Because they just love it so much.
So can social fluency be something that's learned?
Absolutely.
For somebody that feels awkward?
Absolutely.
What are some suggestions that you would share with them to be at more ease? Because we all have this, I feel like, this drive to belong, mm-hmm. to be able to fit in.
Sure.
What would you advise somebody who feels awkward, and they feel it too, and it's not maybe comfortable? How can they be at more ease in social settings?
I guess there's a few things mm-hmm. I'd say. One, it's good to have the social skills, build the social skills you need. But, you know, developmental psychologists have looked for decades now at what makes for a gratifying social life, what makes for great friendships and family relationships, and the ones that really matter, right? And they repeatedly find the same three things. So it's being fair, it's being kind, and it's being loyal.
Oh, wow.
And that might sound so common sense in hindsight, right? But oftentimes I think we forget it, mm-hmm. Especially with all the social demands put out there, or we look on social media, we think, oh, that's socially valued, you know, to have a six-pack abs or something.
Right.
No, it's being fair, being kind, being loyal. And I think if folks think about the people who are really meaningful to them, who've really been the high-quality friends, they embody those qualities over and over again. Awkward people are completely capable of embodying those three qualities, right? And so I found a lot of times awkward adults can have great, amazing friendships, right? Because those are the things that really matter.
Well, I appreciate your work because it makes people, loneliness is an epidemic where people feel isolated, even if they're around people because of maybe, at least I'm speaking from my personal experience, I was surrounded by people. But because I felt like I didn't fit in or I was different in certain ways, I felt like I wasn't connected. Mm-hmm. So loneliness, we know, is just it's a challenge for our mental health. Yeah. But it can lead to other things. And so I appreciate you writing this book and bringing it out to the world because you offer people hope, mm-hmm. right? And actually really help also as well.
I appreciate that.
And I encourage people to share this episode wherever they're consuming it right now. They can take a screenshot of it and post it and share it with their friends and gift a copy of the book to somebody. Because also if the person listening to this or watching it is not, they don't see themselves as socially awkward, maybe gives them a different way of relating to the person in their life that, you know, they've given that label to. Where can people find more about your work? How do they connect with you or go deeper with your knowledge?
Sure. Well, then go to taitoshiro.com, okay. where you can get to most things. Instagram is another good place to find me. And the books are available where books are sold.
Okay, wonderful. We'll put it in the show notes, link to your website, to your social media. And Tai, thank you so much for being on our show again.
Appreciate you, Jim.
Yeah. Thank everybody who's listening. Remember, we put the extended version of this conversation, as we always do, on our YouTube channel. Join 1.5 million plus subscribers there and leave a comment and let me know what you thought about this episode. And if you're willing to share your level of social awkwardness. I feel like this is a very real, raw conversation. But it's having the curiosity to know yourself and then also having the courage to be that person in a world where comparison and social media, or we just have this idealized version of how we think we should be, that your uniqueness could also be your strength and your superpower. So until our next episode, remember to be limitless.